Broadcasting from Youngstown, Ohio, this is the MV Red Podcast, the show where we talk about news and politics impacting the Mahoning Valley, the state of Ohio, and the USA. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, find us on your favorite podcast streaming app or visit our website, www.mvred.com. If you want to share your opinion with us, please email info@mvred.com, as we would love to hear from you. Now, let's get things started. Here are your hosts, Michael Metzinger and Dane Davis.
Episode 39 of the MV Red Podcast. I'm Michael Metzinger, joined with Dane Davis, who's above me here. And we're thrilled this evening to be joined by Ohio House Representative Reardon McLean of the 87th District. So, Reardon, thanks for joining this evening. We're thrilled to have you.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here. Appreciate it.
And so we welcomed State Representative McLean on because we want to talk about the backpack bill, which you are one of the primary sponsors of, correct?
I am. I'm a joint sponsor with my colleague, Marilyn John. Our districts actually touch each other. She's from Richland County, Mansfield, Ohio. I'm from Wyandotte County, but also represent Wyandotte, Crawford, Morrow, most of Marion counties. And she's been a great asset working through this bill. It's been a long time coming. We've been working at this bill for over 2 years now, but it really feels like we're starting to pick up steam, get some positive momentum at the State House, and we'll see where that goes.
Awesome. And I remember, I think I first came across you on Twitter maybe a couple of years ago. And I think at that point in time, I tweeted at you or sent you a direct message just to try to get a status of it update. Because it's something that, you know, I've been following and hoping to see pass through the legislature for quite some time now. And it seems like we're finally at the point where there seems to be definite momentum, not only in the State House, but also in the State Senate. And one of the things I want to start off with before we get too far into it is, it was a letter of the editor to the Warren Tribune Chronicle. And this is actually on the Senate bill. So your bill is House Bill 11. The Senate has a similar bill, Senate Bill 11. Mm-hmm. And the sponsor of that is State Senator Sandra O'Brien, which represents Ashtabula and Trumbull County. So just to my north, the northern portion of the Mahoning Valley. And so she wrote a really good piece in the Warren Tribune Chronicle a couple weeks ago. And I thought before we get into our discussion, this really gives us a nice backdrop as to why this piece of legislation is so important, why we're seeing it, you know, work its way through Ohio and then other states as well. So just give me a moment here and we'll read through this and we'll go from there. So she says, in her case, her bill is called the Parent Educational Freedom Act, Senate Bill 11. It says, offers the educational opportunity for students of both public and private schools. It guarantees parents the right to choose the school that best fits their child's needs. As a former public school educator, which she was, she realizes each child is unique and one size does not fit all. Her bill will provide $5,500 per year for students in grades kindergarten through eighth and $7,500 per year for students in grades 9 through 12, which I believe is similar to your bill as well. And that is the exact same benefit currently offered in Ohio's EdChoice program. So she goes on to say, let's talk dollars. Most of us recently received our property tax bills. On average, 2/3 of those dollars go to local public schools. And if her bill passes, not one of those dollars will go to private schools. She repeats, not one of your local property tax dollars will be taken from your public schools. So then she goes through a list of some interesting facts related to public school funding in Ohio. Per pupil, public school spending has increased every year since 2013. Due to the recent passage of the Fair Funding School Bill, public school funding increased about 25%. Governor DeWine proposed additional funding to be added in the current legislative session. Over the last 10 years, Ohio's public school collective year-to-year carryover has increased from $3.8 billion to $8.7 billion. There's some other ones here I'm not going to read too much about, but she goes on to say, critics of her legislation falsely claim public schools will lose money On the contrary, public schools will retain locally generated tax dollars, leaving more money available to educate the students who remain. They would have a reduction in cost because they would be serving fewer students. Public schools claim that this takes their tax dollars from them. These dollars come from taxpayers. Some of these taxpayers wish to have their tax dollars follow their children to an educational option other than a public school. When government gives money to a parent for Head Start programs, must these dollars be spent at a public school? No. When a student is awarded a Pell Grant for college, does it go directly to a public institution? No. Was the GI Bill only good for public colleges? No. So why can't parents spend their hard-earned dollars at the school they choose for their children? School choice gives parents what they want, ability to maintain control over their child's education school choice offers. Accountability and the fact that parents, not government, not monopoly, know what's best for their children. I'm not going to read through the rest of this. It's a good piece from her. Again, it's from a couple weeks ago in the Warren Tribune Chronicle, but I wanted to offer that as a backdrop to our discussion today. So first off, tell us a little bit about why this matters to you and why you introduced this piece of legislation.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And Sandy O'Brien on the Senate side has been a great advocate for this. The way I explain it, right now we are in a great position as a state legislature if you're interested in school choice. It's a wave that's not only sweeping Ohio. I mean, if you're following nationally, this issue is passing legislatures. It's passed in West Virginia, Arizona, Iowa, Utah, Arkansas just passed it. Tennessee is very close to passing it, along with a number of other states. Ohio, I'm hoping, is next on that list. And like I said, I've been at this for 2 years, trying to get some traction and really faced a lot of roadblocks in last General Assembly and getting sort of this to the top of the issue stack that we're working on. So I am ecstatic that we are at this point today in the legislature. The Senate, through Sandy O'Brien, has the version, and hers is a universal program. It is a universal ed choice expansion. So Ohio currently has ed choice scholarships for two groups of individuals. One, if you are in, you know, what's deemed as a failing school, you can have access to state share of educational dollars to get out of that school and find the right learning environment for you. Or if you are low income, if you are 250% or below of the federal poverty level as a family, you can then also qualify for Ed Choice scholarship dollars, which, as you mentioned, are $5,500 a kid K-8, and then $7,500 a kid for high school 9-12. But if you're in the middle, you know, like most Ohio families in that middle bell curve of society, who cannot pay out of pocket to get your kid into an institution that's not the local public school, or if you don't qualify or not in a failing district, you are bound by your zip code, your house location, to where you have education. And Ohio does have open enrollment, which certainly helps. But if you look at the map of open enrollment between public schools, not every public school allows open enrollment, and it's actually quite drastic. If you look at a map of the state of Ohio on open enrollment, I don't know if either of you have done this, but what happens is the schools in Ohio that tend to not allow open enrollment are the suburban schools around the inner cities throughout the state, the Clevelands, Columbuses, the Toledos, Cincinnati's. They trap these students in these inner city schools. And so many of these kids have no other alternative other than the school, which we've seen over the last couple of years have had challenges even getting into the classroom with COVID. We saw the teachers unions fighting, you know, in essence, to keep their teachers out of the classroom for vaccination status. They hounded Governor DeWine to get moved to the front of the vaccination line. And then once Governor DeWine did that, he moved them ahead of some elderly populations. They still held out and didn't resume in-class instruction. So the opportunity for school choice is certainly ripe in the state. The Senate has their version. My version is a little bit different. It's an ESA model, which is an educational scholarship account. We call it the backpack scholarship because, in essence, you're putting the money on the back of the student, and wherever that student goes, we want the state share of education dollars to follow that child. That's why we call it the backpack bill. And It is universal, so there's no income eligibility. Every student in Ohio would qualify. And very similar to Sandy O'Brien's version, it's an opt-in program. So the same thing as that she said about her program is the same as mine. It doesn't take a dime away from the local public school system unless a child and parents decide to go elsewhere, which in my neck of the woods and many necks of the woods in throughout the state of Ohio, local public schools are doing great work. And I don't see a mass exodus happening. But for those students who do need an alternative educational path, these bills allow them that flexibility and allow them that freedom. And sort of the third prong to school choice right now in Ohio is the governor has actually proposed an ed choice expansion as well. His is not universal. His is up from 250% of the federal poverty level to 400%, which encapsulates a whole new group of students. It gets us much closer to a universal program, but it still leaves kids out. And at the end of the day, myself, Marilyn John, Sandy O'Brien, are really pushing to get Ohio to a universal program like all these other states are doing. You take a lot of the guesswork out of it for parents. You know, am I eligible? Am I not eligible? You are eligible in a universal format. And so we're trying to move the ball forward. It's been this General Assembly. We've had more hearings in a few months than we did in 2 years last General Assembly. And so I'm excited, and other people should be too.
First of all, Representative McLean, it's a cool name. Before we started the recording, I mentioned that you're the nephew of John McLean, who saved Nakatomi Plaza in the early 90s, a horrible terrorist attack.
He's my adopted uncle, absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you for being on, and I do appreciate it. And thank you for your leadership on the bill, quite frankly. I've got lots of questions. I think there's a lot to talk about here. But just in terms of maybe even taking a step back, a comment, you know, it's really interesting. I think in our society, in America today, the very poor and the very wealthy do well under the current system. So if you're poor, right, there have been studies, there are various support programs for you to get aid in that. I'm not saying anybody would want to be poor or anything like that. And if you're very wealthy, obviously you have money and you could just buy your way through problems. But for those of us that are in the middle, you know, working class, middle class, government really isn't your friend in a lot of ways. It takes from you, besides roads, right? It doesn't give you a lot back, right? There are some other things. I'm overstating it. So for the fact that your bill is universal, I think is a really big deal, because that opens up vouchers to an entirely new demographic. I mean, vouchers are not a new idea. I think there were vouchers in New Orleans. There were vouchers I believe still in D.C., right? Washington, D.C. So it's everywhere across the country that these systems exist. But what's new about this current movement and about your bill is the universalization of the benefits, right? You don't have to fit within some income profile to receive benefits. That's revolutionary to me. So maybe a comment there, and then I'll get into my next set.
Yeah, absolutely. It's easier if you treat every child the same, you give them the same access to these dollars. And I will point out, so we do Sandy O'Brien's bill, the governor's proposal in the budget, those are voucher programs. The Ed Choice Scholarship is a voucher program. You can only utilize those dollars to educational institutions. So the government will, ODE will actually send those dollars to your local private school that accepts those dollars. Where my bill is different, it is not a voucher program.
Right.
It is an educational savings account, very much like an HSA, a health savings account that many of us have, where the government, so we have ODE transfers the dollars to, and we actually have the state treasurer's office oversee this, because really all it is a financial account. So they would deposit the funds for the child in their own ESA that the parents would have access to. And then there's a lot of flexibility to the program on how they can utilize those dollars. They can go to private school. They can go to home education curriculums. They can go to after-school tutoring. We actually have sort of career tech, vocational skill training, things really flexible to what the needs of that child are, to what their future is going to be. And so it is not a voucher program. The backpack bill in particular, it is the most flexible model to allow parents really the full gamut of educational opportunities. Now there's going to be oversight. The treasurer's office is responsible for making sure that each expense is education applicable. They're going to be the ones that are approving the expenses, but we want to leave it to the parents. We think that the parents know their children best. I have five children, and you know, in Sandy O'Brien's letter that she submitted there, she, you know, education is not a one size fits all environment. I'm raising five children in the same house, and the differences between each of them are immense. They learn drastically different on you know, certain subjects. And so allowing the parents who sort of have the natural right to make sure, and certainly the interest to make sure that their child exceeds, I think should be in the driver's seat of education, whether that's a local public school or whether that's a different route. And the backpack bill certainly gives parents the opportunity to do that. And not to go along on a too tangent, but I think,
I think
that, you know, when we look at education and we look at outputs of what students learn through the progression of school, the number one identifier of educational success is parent involvement. It's not whether they're in a great teacher in the classroom. Now, those things absolutely help, but the number one indicator for success in the classroom is parental involvement. And you talk about the majority of sort of middle-class Ohioans who don't have the means to get their kid into the best learning environment or a different learning environment. They sort of just, you know, sort of naturally check out of the educational process and send their kid to the local government school because they don't have an alternative. The backpack bill, at a sort of a base philosophical level, gives parents the tools to know that they have choices, will inherently allow them to evaluate those choices and be more involved, which, kind of to go back to what I said earlier, is the number one indicator of child success. So I think this is just, there's a lot of good reasons to go through it, both philosophically, both practically and research-based. So obviously you can tell I'm very excited about this.
No, and rightfully so. And you brought up an important correction, and I totally stand corrected. And I'm somebody that follows this. But the difference between the backpack bill and what's being proposed in a voucher, right? I should use maybe the broader umbrella would be school choice. And yeah, then there are different types of programs which fall under that. So a typical voucher, right? It's the government. Let me ask these questions about mechanics, right? Just so that we're all understanding how mechanically it would work. A voucher, under my understanding, is a student is eligible for the voucher by whatever criteria, usually income. And then the government is writing a check directly to the school that he or she chooses to go to, right? Okay. And what you're proposing is like an HSA or health savings account, which I have, and I've come to love, by the way. I was very reluctant at first, but I have one. Mike, do you have one?
I set one up last year. Thank God I did. Let me tell you.
Yeah, they
came through in a big way for me.
Superb. But essentially, it's a tax sheltered account, right, where money goes into it. It has to be used for a specific purpose. For an HSA, it's healthcare, right? Mm-hmm. For yours, it would be tuition, education.
Yep.
And that money's protected. If you were just to withdraw it, for HSA, you get tons of taxes. For yours, mechanically, I guess my first question would be, if someone gets this account, say a student, and let's just use even numbers for the moment. Let's say it's $5,000. Could they then just withdraw that money and spend it on a new car? How would you protect against that? Could they spend it on like a $2,000 gaming laptop for school, right? How would it mechanically work? Did the parents have to put money in? Is the government putting money in? Is it every year? You know, just talk a little bit mechanically.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are great questions and things that we have to consider. I mean, any government program, you have to factor in how someone's going to try to game the system, try to use it nefariously, which are, you know, a low, low percentage of the people. Most people will not do that, but we have to account for those, just like anything in society. So absolutely, we have our bill gives the treasurer the authority and prescribes him specifically his responsibilities, how to do it. So what would happen is, parents cannot put money into this ESA. The only funds that would be allowed in the ESA would be the ones that the state share of education dollars would go to on a yearly basis. So it's a yearly program. Parents would have to opt in to the program in, I believe, March of each year, well before the school year starts, to make sure that we have, you know, we know where kids are going. Schools can plan for what they're going to have in the classroom and everything. They would have to opt into the program on a yearly basis. Once they opt in, the state would then deposit directly into a specific ESA for that child. So say, you know, for in my example, I have five children, three of them are school age currently. So if I would opt them in, those three, into a backpack scholarship before the school year starts, Treasurer's Office is going to set up three separate ESAs for my children that I would have access as a parent to utilize those dollars. Now, how can we prevent them from, you know, spending it on a car or using it for, you know, whatever else other than educational expenses? So we have two processes for the treasurer, very similar to what an HSA is. We can have learning institutions, curriculum providers, anybody who's in this educational space providing a service, they can apply to the treasurer to become a pre-approved vendor. So, you know, the treasurer will vet them, see what they're providing, take a look at their curriculum, take a look at what they're doing, and then have a determination if they are pre-approved or not. That makes it really easy if they're pre-approved. So then it's the treasurer's office and the parent know that that expense is applicable, can be used through the ESA, and there's no question. Now, if a vendor is not pre-approved for the backpack scholarship program, a parent can still pay out of pocket for those expenses and then submit receipts, documentation to the ESA, to the treasurer's office for the ESA, and say, hey, I spent, you know, X on this for my child. And then the approval process would happen. So it wouldn't be guaranteed. The treasurer would have oversight on if that expense is reasonable for what it is. But there's plenty of checks and balances to the program to make sure that parents are using it for the education of their children. And at the end of the day, it's the treasurer's office that's going to be overseeing that. And we've looked at many different ways how to not reinvent the wheel, whether because the tax department in the state of Ohio is really good at looking at receipts, really good at looking at documentation. How can we loop them in? The attorney general and the auditor office have all said that they would be willing to do what they can to provide oversight. Right now, we leave it with the treasurer's office, but we're working through any additional things that we can put into the bill. But at the end of the day, we want it to be flexible, like we said, for most Ohioans who are going to do the right thing, put it to the uses for their education of their children, and then make sure we have guardrails for those, you know, extreme outliers who may not.
So two quick questions, and then I'll turn it back over to Michael. Mechanically, so this is really helpful because mechanically, again, the mind immediately goes to vouchers, but it's not quite. It's school choice, but not vouchers. It's mm-hmm. different. What happens if, say, you know, the government is giving each student annually? That's also important. It's not monthly. It's not quarterly. It's annually. Say $5,000 and tuition's only $4,000. Okay, what happens to the money that's surplus? Obviously, in deficit, the parents would have to make up for it. But what about a surplus? So that's one. And then two, a potential criticism of your bill is that it allows the state government more control over the education system, because in order to kind of get the approval that it's a legitimate tuition expense, there's the chance, right, or the possibility that the government essentially has to approve the school. And therefore, schools which are kind of private right now and are functioning outside of the system of the state or the purview of the state, all of a sudden would be brought under it. So the quick question and the first one and then this bigger one, and then I'll stop. And I know Michael's got a lot, so sorry. There's tons to ask. This is really
interesting. Yeah, I mean, those are great questions. I mean, you're spot on. Those are some challenges we're working through. And so the deficit, or I guess not the deficit, but if there were actual, you know, remaining funds in the account at the end of the year, the way we account for that is we actually allow for a 50% rollover year to year. So in your example, say there's They get $5,500. They use 4,000 of it. So now there's $1,500 remaining in this ESA at the end of the year. The way that we do this to allow for some more fiscal savings for the state is we actually say, okay, you can keep $750 of that in that account for that student that could be used the following year. But $750 is actually going to come back to general revenue fund for the state that we can now utilize for the broader education sphere. So we allow a 50% rollover from year to year. That prevents from expenses, you know, accumulating, large numbers of expenses accumulating in these ESAs. It will automatically, you know, half every, at the end of every school year. And then we actually, at the end of the life cycle, so at the end of year 12, when you graduate the system, and if there are remaining funds in that, we actually allow a last additional 50% rollover either to your higher education expenses or into a 529 plan, or we allow 50% to be rolled back to a sibling. So,
oh, that's
so,
cool.
So we allow for some flexibility for parents. We account for the year to year things that way. Now I have colleagues who want, you know, to call it all back. I've got colleagues who want to give it all to the student 100%, no rollback, into the program, but we have it currently written as 50%.
Okay.
And then the second part of your question regarding sort of the entities not taking any tax dollars now, and now the government's going to, and with money comes strings, as we see from the federal government all the time. I'm one of the staunchest advocates against that, against government intrusion, against government overreach at the state house. And at the end of the day, this is an opt-in program. I have got pushback from some and schools in my district who are what considered 08 schools within the Ohio revised code. They're the non-charter, non-public, so they're taking no tax dollars currently. And many of them don't want to take any tax dollars, regardless of what programs are out there. So we certainly will see private schools out there who will not accept backpack scholarships. We'll see home education students whose parents decide to not take backpack scholarships because they know that, you know, potentially down the road, further things go. Now, we expressly write into the bill that this gives no additional authority to add any education requirements to the bill. We have some national standardized testing requirements so if you're a private school who accepts backpack scholarships, we're going to make you, you know, test those students on for K-8. We're going to make you test those students on the national standardized tests, and you're not going to have to submit them to the state on an individual level, but you're going to have to provide that data cumulative to all of the students in the school. So there are minimum testing requirements that we feel are reasonable, but there will certainly be people who don't want to take the scholarship. And that's totally fine. That this program is flexible. It allows you to take it if you want it. If you don't want it, that's fine. If you want to stay in your local public school, that's fine. It just puts parents and gives them at the end of the day, the choice.
Excellent. So you just hit home on one of my questions that I was going to ask, and that was, with additional schools that could be recipients or considered like an approved vendor or approved a school to accept these ESA dollars, the idea of oversight, and you just kind of touched on it with standardized testing. Because if you think of it, I'm somebody who loves sports, and I'm sure you might recall, I think it was last year, there was a school in Ohio, a charter school, Bishop Sycamore, which
they didn't do much schooling.
Yes. So from that perspective, how could you alleviate fears of folks on the fence, you know, outside of just standardized testing? What else can be done to ensure that these dollars go to, you know, appropriate schools that obviously receive some sort of oversight, so we don't have a situation where a Bishop Sycamore pops up and, you know, isn't doing much educating?
Sure. Yeah. You know, that school would have never, and actually was never fully vetted through ODE and never fully set up. And with the program that we have within the backpack scholarship, they would not be an approved educational expense. I mean, there was that is, you know, certainly an off the wall example that my political opponents and others certainly take and try to run with and use it as in opposition to the bill. But in reality, that is not going to pass for what an approved expense would be, and should be treated as the exception that it is. Make sure the guardrails are in place to stop those types of situations from happening. But certainly not to let that be a detriment to all of the good-hearted people throughout the state that are that, you know, all the kids that could utilize these scholarships and set them on a path for success. I mean, we had, I don't know if you follow this, Walter Blanks Jr. Do either of you know the name ring a bell? So Walter Blanks Jr. is incredible. I've been following him for a while through social media. He's actually on staff now with American Federation for Children, doing advocacy work in this space in school choice. And he's a Columbus, he's an Ohio guy. He was born and raised in Columbus. I had him come back for proponent testimony a week ago, and he just is an amazing story for this movement. I can't do his story justice, but he was grew up in inner city Columbus, was bullied at school, really failing, you know, got into a fight. His mom got called into the office to deal with the disciplinary that he, you know, got into fight for standing up for himself, and basically said, the superintendent or the principal at the school said, well, we understand that we're not meeting the needs of your kid. Well, give me 5 years and we'll get this school turned around. And Walter's mom, you know, looked him right in the eye and said, I don't have 5 years. I'm sorry. I can. So he actually qualified for an EdChoice scholarship. He got out of that school, got into a learning environment that was best for him. And he's just rocketed. He did a round table with President Trump years ago in DC and kind of famously, it's a good clip, but famously told Trump, I'm coming for your job. You better watch out. As a, you know, young 20 year old kid in DC, and just phenomenal. But how many more Walter Blanks are out there that are just for whatever reason failing in their local situation and could benefit from their parents having choice, getting into the right learning environment. And he's just one Ohioan that's really spotlighted this issue.
I'm gonna have to do some research on him.
Yeah, he's remarkable.
One other question I have is, I presume the other angle opponents of this legislation are going to hit you on is going to be cost, because, you know, when you look at the numbers, I think, is there something close to, I could be off on this, 90,000? What's the number of students currently enrolled in private schools throughout Ohio or considered homeschooled?
It's hard to put a number on it, but it's a little over 100,000. I mean, you know, estimates put it sort of right around that range, 100,000, 110,000-ish, you know.
So do you envision, let's say this piece of legislation passes, it gets through, becomes law. What if there is, let's say, a 20% increase in parents who would like to send their children to you know, a private school or go the homeschool route and take advantage of this program? What do you say to critics who are going to say this program can quickly become too expensive?
Yeah. So we have in Ohio, Legislative Service Commission, LSC for short. They're an outstanding, independent body that does a lot of our research for us. And they're a huge asset to us. They write, and check a lot of the legislation that we work on. They put out fiscal analysis for every bill that we have. They put out a fiscal analysis for my bill, and they put a big number on it. And my opponents, absolutely. I mean, if you read the Dispatch over the last couple of weeks, the Dispatch put that number front and center on their headline. It's $1.13 billion would be LSC's fiscal analysis on 100% take up rate. And now this is the analogy that I use. $1.13 billion in cost would be the same with backpack scholarship program, would be the exact same as if this abortion amendment that's coming this November likely would pass. In the following year, we would have 150,000 abortions in the state of Ohio. It's based on a 100% take up rate. That would be every pregnancy in the state of Ohio would end in abortion. That's not going to happen. And it's certainly not going to happen that 100% of the eligible students would not take backpack scholarships, especially ever really, but you know, absolutely not in year one, to many of the challenges that we've already discussed. I mean, there are many institutions, you know, those OA schools, home educating parents, that have told me directly, we want nothing to do with these scholarships. And they're pushing back on me, saying, we don't want to even be involved in the program because of that. We want you to write home educated students out of this bill. I've been unwilling to do that to date, because I value their education just as much as I value, you know, every other student throughout the state of Ohio. I think this should truly be a universal program. Conservative estimates on this. So basically, you take that $1.13 billion, you break it down. It's about 11. So it'd be 11.3 million per 1% take up rate. You got to look at how many people will take it. What is the capacity in our non-public school system to take these kids? Like, is there going to be a private school that can take the kid if they want to go into the program on year one? Many places in the state, my district included, there's not enough private schools to take these kids. So there's going to be, with this program, there will be a slow incremental build. We've had some other outside analysis done from, you know, comparative to other states and Ohio's Ed Choice programs, which peg this as kind of what you said, like a 10 to 20%, somewhere in that range. Year one, probably more towards the 10%. So you're looking at about 113 million to 226 million, say 20% in year one. And you know, that's new money. The state has the money in terms of our surplus today. I mean, we've operated, as Sandy O'Brien mentioned there, I mean, we've operated state surpluses over the last few years. We've done fiscally well. We have the money currently. We need to make sure that we budget this into years moving forward. But that kind of walks through where, I mean, does that make sense? I threw a lot of numbers out there, but that's really what I'm looking at.
I was at a recent Lincoln Day in Geauga County, and we had Senator O'Brien there. We had Sarah Fowler, Steve Demetrio, two state reps, and not Nick Santucci. He should have come over west, but he's probably very busy. And we had one more. Senator Niraj Antani. Am I pronouncing that correctly? I hope so.
Niraj Antani, yes.
Yeah, and so Niraj was sitting at our table, and I asked him about the backpack bill, this bill, and specifically, like, where is it going? What's the possibility for passing, right? And his comment to me was, look, I co-sponsored school choice in the Senate. I'm in favor of it. But the big difficulty is not the Senate, but the Ohio House. And you know, we have a majority. I don't know if we have a super majority of Republicans in the Ohio House, but we definitely have a majority. We have a majority in the Senate. We have a Republican governor. So what is the difficulty in the House? What's the dynamic there? And maybe more broadly speaking, you know, what's a realistic chance that this gets passed?
So last General Assembly, we had, this is a majority winning issue in my caucus. Me talking to my colleagues, I have over 50 who would vote for this if it gets to the floor tomorrow.
Okay.
The question is getting, last General Assembly, there were a few individuals who just happened to have the right seats of power, that this was not their issue. They did not want to push the envelope. We had just passed the Fair School Funding Plan in the budget cycle. I support the Fair School Funding Plan. My approach to education is determine how much it costs to educate a child. That the Fair Funding Plan, you know, aims to do that, looking at all factors. How much does it cost to educate a kid in the state of Ohio? Fully fund that system. Make sure that that's a priority every budget cycle, that we're going to say Ohio is going to fully fund its educational system. And then give parents the choice of where to spend those dollars. That's kind of my three-pronged approach to education. But passing the Fair School Funding Plan and not fully funding it in the last cycle, really, you know, there were many people who were okay with that and didn't want to address this issue. This cycle, we've had people like those from your area who have been supportive of this bill, has been a high ticket issue because the voters have told them. So from all corners of the state of Ohio, there have been a ton of grassroots advocacy groups going around and making this an issue, making sure their lawmakers know that this is an issue that they care about. And so there's a definite climate change in terms of the view of school choice at the state house. But we don't have everybody on board. We do have super majorities on the Republican side, both in the House and the Senate. We've got political battles, even though within that, which I'm sure you've seen or have heard about, at least on the House side, we've had some political fights within our caucus, which has made it more difficult. But at the end of the day, we have the Speaker of the House who has made backpack part of his priority bill platform. So we're taking that and running with it. We're acting like this is going to be a priority of the House, and we're gonna stick to it. The House, the Senate, the governor are all sort of roughly pointing in the same direction. It's just going to be, where do we land? How do we sort of, you know, come to agreements on some of the areas that we maybe disagree on, whether it's a voucher program, whether it's an ESA program, whether or not home educators get access to the dollars, or whether or not they're a tax credit. That's another part of Sandy O'Brien's bill. Home educators get an increased tax credit, but they're not, because they can't take a voucher. There's no school that it can go to. How do we work out those differences? And so I'm absolutely confident that we're going to. This is certainly a budget conversation, which is why we're really trying to get a lot of this conversation done now, because we're heavy into the state budget, and we need to factor in the cost of this. We need to weigh that against the other things that are competing for dollars within the budget. It's just a different tone. And a lot of that is based on the freshman legislators that are now in the state house, that have been on the ground throughout the state of Ohio, listening to voters, and every, you know, almost unilaterally, all of those freshman legislators who have come in and said, you know, I'm with you, I want to help you get backpack done. And I think that's a testament to the citizens of Ohio, you know, telling them that this is an issue they care about.
It certainly seems as though 6 months from now, a year from now, the outlook of school choice is going to look quite a bit different than what it currently stands. Because as you mentioned, you know, you have your piece of legislation in the House, Sandra O'Brien's in the Senate, and then the governor pushing just to increase the current Ed Choice program to 400%. So it certainly seems as though there will be change, and it will be change for the better for the school choice movement. It's just a question of how far do we go? And I mean, do you think we could get your legislation through in this, you know, 2 year term, or do you think it's still a longer term battle?
Well, yet to be seen. I think the momentum's there. I think, you know, public opinion is there. I mean, if you look at the national polling on this, I mean, it's not just a Republican issue. It's not Democrats, it polls high with Democrats too. What this comes down to, it is a parents' issue. You know, through COVID, schools closing, parents being, you know, having a front row seat to the education of their children because of all the distance learning programs where kids were learning over computers and parents were watching what their teachers were telling them. I think throughout the state, I mean, parents became awake to what was going on in their schools, whether, you know, they wanted to or not. And so, I mean, this is the approach of this is multifaceted. A lot of it is curriculum based. A lot of it is, you know, just basically values based. Some of the radical ideology that's getting into the classroom that parents are just not okay with. And then also from an educational, you know, standpoint, coming out of COVID, Ohio has 40% kids failing the third grade reading guarantee. And wow. Now in my colleague's answer to that, there's a bill in the state house that says, well, let's just wipe out the third grade reading guarantee. Well, it's like, I don't know. I can't get behind that. I mean, learning, you learn to read, the whole third grade reading guarantee program was designed based on you learn to read by the age of a third grader. And then the rest of your educational life, you read to learn. It is a critical component to being able to have a successful educational career. And coming out of COVID with remediation rates and other things, we've got 40% of third graders who are not proficient in reading. And my colleagues, you know, answer to that is, well, let's just pass them on to fourth grade because we can't continue to hold them back. And I don't think that's the right approach. And I've stood up and said, well, what if the learning environment needs to change? Instead of just passing them on to fourth grade, why can't we look at programs like Backpack that allow the parents to get them into a different learning environment?
Yeah, you know, what's really needed, I read a statistic that said 66% of the city of Cleveland, where I live, I work downtown, I live outside of it, but 66% of that city is functionally illiterate, right? And I read so much every day. I read a lot at work. I read for pleasure. And it's just amazing to me, the whole world that is shut off if you don't know how to read, right? It's so fundamental, not only to education, but I think just to being a human being, right? There's such a deep well that you draw from when you're able to read. But of course, what we really need, I think you're totally wrong. What we need is more LGBT education in our classrooms, right? And that's really the priority, that, you know, first graders can learn that they are trans and take hormones that prevent them from reaching puberty. Because we all know that a first grader can consent to that, right? And knows that. That should absolutely be the priority. You know, people learning to read, I guess that's nice, right? But that's not really essential. What's really essential is the gingerbread gender man, or the gender gingerbread man. Which, Michael, have you ever seen the gender gingerbread man? Yeah, it's like it teaches you how there's gender and sex. And that. I'm being facetious.
Parents are looking and seeing what their kids are bringing home from school and are not okay with that. I mean, we had a full day of proponent testimony, and I would say a large percentage of that was strictly curriculum based. And it's not every school district. We have local control where school boards are handling some of these things, but it is far too prevalent and available to educators to focus on things that are not core competencies of what they originally set out to do to make sure kids were educated. There's a stat that's just wild. I don't know if either of you follow Hillsdale College, President Larry Arndt up at Hillsdale. He's really tuned into sort of education and the changes in education and really the bureaucracy that education has become at the state level and the national level. And there's a stat, it's a national stat, but Ohio is very similar to it. It shows over the last 20 years, the percentage growth in schools, and I'll throw this out to you, I'll see what you guys think. So the percentage growth in schools for students in the last 20 years nationwide was about 7%. So we have more students than we did 20 years ago. Teachers has kept pace. I think we have, I think the number is 8% growth in teachers. And I could have those back, but they're 7-8. Teacher-student ratio is pretty much the same. What would you think nationally, the administrative state, administrators, so all of these other non-classroom functions, what do you think the percentage growth over the last 20 years has been?
50%. Michael, what's your guess?
25%. I won't go that.
Go higher.
Both of those are ridiculously high, but it's 87%.
Yeah.
87%. I mean, we're spending more money on education in the state of Ohio than we ever have. That money's not getting to the classroom. It's getting to new administrative positions being created to serve, you know, wraparound services, all of these, and many of them are real needs of these kids. We have to look at you know, kids have real needs that need to be met, but we can't just continue to create new positions. We need to, you know, at the end of the day, my bill looks at the environment, the learning environment that they're in, and says, hey, maybe someone else can do it better.
I got one more comment question, and then I'll stop for Michael. I don't want to filibuster. Obviously, I'm not in the Ohio Senate, so I shouldn't be able to filibuster. Are they allowed to filibuster in the Ohio Senate?
No, we don't have those. Okay. Congress is a different animal. No filibustering here.
Yeah, no filibustering. You know, just as a general comment, I think that there has been, like, if you think about your bill and what it does with the ESAs and the monies, you know, value to be determined. But even I think I saw 5,000 and 7,500.
So it's the same across the board. The current ESA is 5,500 a kid for K to 8, 7,500 a kid for high school. My bill models that all the okay. same numbers.
So if you think about this bill 20 years ago, Michael and I both went to Catholic school, high school and grade school. This would have been revolutionary. And if this were announced or even being contemplated 20 years ago, I think it would have been the topic in Ohio, because this, let's not undersell it. This bill could fundamentally reshape the education system, maybe not immediately. And I agree. I don't think there's going to be a massive sea change, but over the medium to long term, absolutely. If you give people a choice, it's absolutely a factor. And especially middle-class families that are kind of locked out from the voucher system, right? Mm-hmm. It's huge. It's a sea change, right? And I think it redistributes power away from education bureaucracies. I don't even want to say it redistributes power away from public schools, because that's not quite accurate. Mm-hmm. It's about the education bureaucracies, right? It's taking power from them and it's giving it to the parents. But now this bill is being discussed. I think you're right that it has a majority support. And there has just been a huge sea change on the ground with regards to public opinion and the notion of school choice. What do you think? I have a theory, but I want to hear from you. What fundamentally caused that radical tectonic shift in attitudes towards school choice?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of things that go into it. I think there, you know, I mean, really, if you want to look at as sort of the seismic shift in this space, it was really COVID, and it was what happened. It was parents really seeing some things that they wouldn't have normally seen. We saw how, you know, like I said earlier, we saw how teachers unions handled getting the vaccine and reopening schools. I mean, schools in my district didn't shut down. They had to shut down a few times because of outbreaks and they had to, but other than that, they were in school. We had, you know, Columbus City Schools in the state of in Ohio, which literally closed their doors for over a calendar year, and had like kids unaccounted for, like that were not logging in virtually. Like there was, I can't remember the exact number, but it was like over 20,000 kids. I think it was much more than that, that were just unaccounted for throughout the system, throughout the state of Ohio. And I mean, so if you're looking for one sort of seismic shift, I mean, things were trending that direction anyway. But I mean, it was a tectonic plate moved during COVID, and parents' eyes were open. And there's, you know, people out there that say there's a new special interest group in town, and it's parents.
Yeah,
they're at the plate for legislative fixes to what they saw.
I think a lot of people, and then I'll pause to turn over to Michael. I think a lot of people with the shutdowns and then the masking and how long it went on, right? Long after there was any justification, schools were still shut down and they were still masking. I think that woke a lot of people up. And you know, we always had in our mind that the public school teacher was always looking out for the students, but here were these public school bureaucracies. I don't want to target the teachers because it's not about them.
No, you know, no one goes into education. I mean, everyone who goes into education, they care about kids. They want to
Better
than kids. I mean, we have great teachers and administrators
throughout the
state, but it's all the bureaucracy and all of the things that go into it.
Yeah. And they were just preventing kids from going to school, and they were preventing kids quite frankly with the masking, right? I don't know how you can learn to speak well if you can't see somebody's mask, especially in those formative years.
My sister's a speech pathologist. And I mean, how do you grow up and you're learning, trying to figure out sounds, mouth functions, like, you know, a lot of what you say is not, you know, the words that are coming out of your mouth, it's your expression. I mean, that's so much in communication. And the kids that had to grow up, go through that environment, I mean, it's sad because of how detrimental that was to their progression. And we're continuing to see the scores, the national assessment scores, educational standards, the scores have dipped, like, which is, you know, certainly understandable given the circumstances. It's not the kids' fault. It's in large cases, the entities that were at interest to keep them out of the classroom.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, Michael, I don't want to.
No, and I kind of want to work to wrap this up here in the next few minutes, but you made a great comment, Reardon, that I did not think of is the percentage increase with administrative staff at schools across the nation. And one of the things, full disclosure, I am on the board of a Catholic high school in Youngstown where Dan and I went. But one of the things that I do pay very close attention to from my perspective on the finance committee is enrollment of school districts, especially in Mahoning and Trumbull County. And what's remarkable to me is there are some school districts, especially in Trumbull County, one of which only has 54 students in the entire high school. And maybe in other parts of rural Ohio, that might be common. But in a county that has 200,000 people, that isn't really common. And those school districts have those administrative staff that on the backs of the property taxes that the taxpayers are paying in, and they're footing the bill for this administrative staff. So you brought that up, and I think it's a really interesting point, because I imagine there's going to be pushback to this piece of legislation, but I think a lot of that pushback should be maybe look more so at the local level. I think parents are starting to wake up and get more well informed on the local schools and what they're teaching, what their children are learning, the overall objectives of that school district. And I think they should also be looking at the size of the school district. You know, if our enrollment's down and our teaching staff is down, where's our administrative staff? Is it up? And so that's something else that you brought up that I think is really important. I was going off on a tangent there, but bottom line, with this piece of legislation and the one with Senator O'Brien and even what the governor's proposing, is the beautiful thing is with school choice comes competition. And if this piece of legislation passes between open enrollment across public schools, a good chunk across Ohio, and then having the backpack bill in effect, it really prevents schools, not only just public schools, but also private schools from becoming complacent. I think far too often, whether it's people in their careers or businesses or schools, people, it's easy to grow complacent with things. And this prevents
my waistline.
Yeah. And I think that's ultimately what's best for parents, for students in Ohio. And that's why I'm very hopeful that this piece of legislation passes. But to the people who are going to be listening in the days, weeks, and months ahead, what can they do to help get this bill to the finish line?
Yeah, I mean, my fellow legislators need to hear your voice. I mean, call, email, hit the contact us button on the House of Representatives website, and make sure that they know that this is an issue that you're passionate about, that you want to see get to the finish line. I mean, we can't take any momentum for granted. I mean, nothing is ever something. I've only been in the legislature for 5 years, and something that I've learned is that nothing is ever guaranteed. There, if you have the opportunity to do something, you need to see it through to the finish line. And this is something that there is positive momentum on, but we are far from the finish line. And so, making sure your voice is heard through calls, text, if you have the ability to come to Columbus, to make the drive into Columbus, see your legislator in person, your senator, your representative, do it. I mean, this is going to need the groundswell of support from all corners of the state of Ohio, because this issue is not isolated to any one district. I mean, we all have students in the state of Ohio in the districts that we represent that could value that could benefit from the value that this would present them. And Michael, you mentioned competition is key. I'm a business guy. I have my MBA. Was before I came to the State House, was part of a startup company, and the competition drives excellence. It drives value to the consumer at the end of the day, and allowing for schools to compete for the kids is only going to drive up and allow them to better serve and be better in tune with what the parents expect. At the end of the day, I have friends who are in school administrative positions and said that there are when kids have opportunities. So like a STEM school or something will open up, or maybe a charter school will open up in the area, which gives a little bit of a taste of competition to the local school district. They said it does have tangible difference or tangible meaning to the way that the administrators view those kids, to say, hey, how can we better serve these kids and allow them to remain in our school so they don't go and take their dollars with them to those schools within our current system. This just will expand that to every student, and not to only the gifted students or kids that have a chance to go elsewhere, but to every student.
And one other point I want to make. So State Senator O'Brien's bill has had 3 hearings. Yours in the House has had, what, 2 hearings thus far? Where do we go from here at the committee level?
We've had 2 hearings on our side. We're not going to be on the agenda this week. We're going to be on the agenda next week, which will be the 3rd hearing in the series, will be opponent testimony. So we've done sponsor testimony, which was myself and my joint sponsor, then proponent testimony, which went for 4 hours, a little over 4 hours. I mean, it was incredible. We had people from all over the state, parents, educators, teachers, administrators, students. And then the next one will be opposition testimony. And so the one thing I've asked the committee members to listen to is when someone's given a testimony, whether it's proponent or opponent, listen to what the focus is. And traditionally, this is what it's been. The proponents focus certainly on the student. This is what's in the best interest of the student, and it's down to that level. But any opposition that I've heard is always about the effects on the system. This is going to, you know, cripple the school system. This is going to be detrimental to teacher retirement accounts. Or, you know, it is never the student. It's never the best interest of the student. So I'm interested to see how opposition testimony will go. Once you get the 3 hearings in, then the chairman can call a vote. He can have additional hearings if he'd like to bring in more proponents and opponents and answer different questions, do amendments. But once you've had the 3 hearings, then it's fair game for a committee vote and get to the floor. So it becomes sort of a race between the House and the Senate, who's going to get their version to the other chamber first. They're a little bit ahead of us, like you said, and we'll see where that goes. I know the Senate president is 100% on board with moving this issue forward. Our speaker has said he is as well, and so I'm going to hold him to that. And you know, citizens throughout the state should not only contact their local legislator, but make sure the speaker, he has a lot of power within our system. Make sure the speaker hears your voice, that you want this issue to be brought to the full House floor for a vote. So those are things you can do. Contact your legislator, contact the Speaker of the House, Jason Stevens, contact the governor, let him know that when this gets to his desk, that you want him to sign it. And then also, you know, public opinion certainly matters. So write an op-ed like Sandy O'Brien did. We are all free citizens. We can all, you know, use the media to your advantage. If you believe in this issue, just write a quick note in your local paper. Tell people at the coffee shop. Just have these conversations.
I want you to know, and Michael, I'm going to challenge you on this one. I have 3 kids, 4, almost 5, basically 5. 3 and 1, and they wrote letters to Mr. Demetrio and Miss Fowler Arthur to support the backpack bill. The letters, they were great. They were written by their mother, but they dictated the sentences. So, Mike, you got to get your kids to write on the backpack bill. But if I can, you know, as we wrap up, I have to say, like, this type of legislation is really meaningful. It moves the ball, and it always feels like as a conservative that we're always on the defensive and we're retreating and losing, and we're always negotiating the terms of surrender, mm-hmm. right? But what's exciting about your bill is it's quite frankly a revolutionary bill that changes the system for the benefit of students and parents. And I really think that the word that came to my mind was sovereignty. This is about who controls mm-hmm. education. Is it the parents for the benefit of the students, or is it bureaucracies, right? For the benefit of bureaucracies, right? Not even for education or for teachers, but just the, like a self-perpetuating bureaucracy, right? And this is about sovereignty. Who rules in the state of Ohio? And I think that your bill is really exciting. I hope we don't get something lame like, oh, vouchers up to 200% of the income limit, because I think the big radical thing is if you get middle-class families that have access to a voucher, that really threatens the public school system, and it really forces them to up their game. And I don't think they're ever going to go away, because with small towns, right, it makes sense to have a single public school, but they don't need to. It's that pressure, just applying a little bit of pressure, like Michael put it very well, fundamentally reshifts the game, in my opinion. So I just want to say thank you, and I'm excited. This is one of the few pieces of legislation that's genuinely exciting.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I'm right there with you. You know, I'm an MBA. I'm a marketing guy, business guy. I didn't come to work in Columbus with education policy on my mind. I want to make Ohio the best place to start a business and make sure that Ohioans can serve other Ohioans in that capacity, but seeing the issues and seeing the need in education has drawn me to this issue, has just been on my heart to move the ball forward on this and to make sure that we lead the way in Ohio. And we had a chance to, and now we've been passed by a number of other states who have jumped ahead of us on this issue, but I'm not going to stop. Frankly, the governor's plan to increase to 400% of poverty does feel kind of what you said, just to kind of, you know, move the ball ahead a little bit and say, okay, hey, we had a gain. This is not the time to do that. This is the time for bold leadership to make sure that we capture this momentum on this path. And you're right, it is a sovereignty issue. It is a natural law issue. Who at the end of the day is responsible for that kid? Is it the parent? Or is it the state? And
yes.
I think it's the parent. No doubt. That is natural law. You know, that is the way that throughout human history that it has worked. And I think it's really telling. If you follow these, you know, conversations, this was in Georgia a couple of days ago. But there was a legislator in Georgia who was talking about school choice and parents having, you know, the ability to make decisions for their kids. And what she said was, well, some of these kids don't have college degrees themselves. How can they make, you know, education decisions for their child? And I think that's a scary, questioning, you know, if people are able to make decisions for themselves and their children. I think that's pretty fundamental to me, that we have the liberty and the free will to do that, and that we don't need to be controlled and maintained by these, quote unquote experts that humans have rights and the ability to make decisions for themselves.
It goes to the fundamental relationship between the citizen and the state.
Exactly.
Does the state exist to serve the citizen, or does the citizen exist to serve the state?
Exactly.
And lately it's gone too much to the latter, and this is important, shifting it back to the former, where the state is created to serve the citizen, and the citizen is ultimately, and the family, right, in the broader sense, is ultimately
absolutely
sovereign.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Exciting stuff. Michael, I'll turn it over to you to conclude and end it. But this was, how do you get these good guests, Michael? I don't know how you do it. He's the mastermind.
I bombard him on Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm glad you grabbed me. I mean, this is great. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people will learn a lot from this discussion. I learned a lot because honestly, you know, for my work on that board of that Catholic high school, we've been following this very closely. And I didn't quite understand necessarily the differences between the House bill that you're proposing and the Senate bill. One of the things I took away was the House bill was for the 2024-2025 school year, I believe. Mm-hmm. The Senate one is far more aggressive this upcoming school year. I'm not sure how that's going to schematically how that would all work. But State Senator O'Brien, at the end of her letter to the editor of the Warren Tribune, she says, for those students who want their tax dollars to follow their children, let's give them the freedom to do so. And I agree with her 100%. I think momentum's definitely on our side, and you're a great champion for this piece of legislation in the House, and whatever we can do to support it, we will certainly go about doing so. I might have to get my little boys to write some letters as well.
There you go.
To support it. But thank you so much for joining us. We'll be definitely promoting this like crazy, because I think there's a lot of great information here. And it's to me, it's very reasonable. The end goal is what's best for the student and for families across Ohio. And by doing this, by getting this legislation passed, it also allows for that competition factor to come into play and really pushes all schools to try to be the best that they possibly can be. And ultimately, at the end of the day, that's what's best for the future of Ohio. That's ultimately what it's all about.
I agree. I mean, I really appreciate the opportunity to come on and meet both of you virtually here. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's what is the focus of education? What is that sort of center sphere that everything else revolves around? Is it the child, each individual student, or is it the education system at large? And this does provide a reshifting of thinking. And really, you know, I think to the betterment of future children throughout the state of Ohio. So hope we can get it done.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, we're behind you every step of the way. And again, we thank you so much for joining us. And we'll be following it closely. And anything we could do to promote it, we'll be glad to do so.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, State Representative
Bruno
McLean. We appreciate it.